As you know, my name is Brian Tracy, and some of you know a little bit about me, but I started off speaking about 25 years ago, and I'd never really given a talk before, so I backed into speaking, and I'll tell you some of the things that I did accidentally, which turned out to be the right things. But since then, I've given 4,000 talks. I've given talks in 45 countries. I have spoken to more than 4 million people, directly and indirectly. My biggest live talk was to 23,000 people in a stadium. My biggest live and satellite talk was to 85,000 people and 600 hookups worldwide. So I've had a little bit of experience. I've spoken on a great variety of subjects. I've done talks as short as 6 and 7 minutes, and I've done talks as long as 4 days. I have prepared each of my talks in a particular way. I have taken more than 10 years of advanced coaching from some of the top speaking coaches in the world. I have read dozens of books on the subject of speaking, looking for gems and ideas that I could use. And everything is going to be putting together into what we talk about now. So let me start off by saying this. Your ability to think and speak on your feet can do more to help your career and your personal life than any other skill. And I'll tell you why that is. People who can speak on their feet are considered to be more intelligent than others. They're even considered to be more attractive or handsome. They're considered to be better educated or more knowledgeable. You know, a person with very little going for them except the ability to speak well is actually upgraded in the estimate of everyone around them. Now, we know that your ability to communicate in meetings and presentations will account for fully 85% of your success in your career. And this comes from surveys of top executives who say that 85% of their success or failure is good communicating or failure to communicate well. And the good news is that you can learn to become a far better communicator by learning how to prepare a winning presentation. I'll come back to this in a couple of minutes. Learning how to prepare and deliver a presentation, fortunately, is a skill that you can learn like riding a bicycle. It's based on simple, proven, practical formulas that have been developed by millions of people for hundreds of years. Now, here's an important point. No one's smarter than you. No one's better than you. If someone can get up and give a great talk, you can be sure of one thing. At one time, he could not lead silent prayer in a phone booth. Everyone grows up with a fear of public speaking. In fact, according to the surveys and the Guinness Book of Records and the Book of Questions and Answers, 54% of adults fear public speaking more than they fear death. That's how much there's fear for public speaking. In fact, sometimes in my audience, I'll explain to people how an irrational fear can affect them. And I'll say, now, most people are afraid of public speaking. So in order to overcome that, I'm going to call someone from this audience up here to the stage to give us a 2-minute presentation on their work a little later on in the talk. And I just stop. And I say, now, how many people here, stomach just froze up? And you said to yourself, I sure hope it's not me. And it's always the case. Almost everybody in the audience raises their hand. I sure hope it's not me. I said, I'm just doing this as an example. I'm not going to do it. But just the fact of suggesting that you're going to be called up to speak causes people's stomach to contract and jerk. And so, wonderful things, we can get over this fear. Now, when you learn and practice what the best communicators have learned and practice, you'll soon get the same results they do. And in this seminar, you're going to learn the most important techniques ever developed to help you to become a more powerful and persuasive communicator in every area of your business life. Now, fortunately, and I've written all this stuff down, so if you hear pages turning, it's because I've spent a lot of preparation, and you'll understand why as we go along. Now, there are 3 key communication tools for success in business today. They're also helpful in personal life as well. But in business, the first is a meeting. And you have to understand about meetings. A meeting is a presentation. A meeting is an opportunity for you to perform in front of others. It's a meeting is a chance for you to give a public talk, if you like, even though everyone is sitting down. And here's an important point. People who do not contribute to meetings are considered to have nothing to contribute. So if you're fearful or tense about speaking up in a meeting, it's actually sabotaging your life and your career. People actually downgrade you, consider you to be not particularly intelligent or competent, because you sit there afraid to speak up. So just learning how to speak up in a meeting dramatically improves your self-concept and self-esteem, but it dramatically improves the opinion that other people have of you. And so everything we talk about here today can be used to speak effectively when you're in meetings with other people. Many people have changed their entire careers by just being really effective in a small meeting. For example, Bill Gates was able to convince the senior executives of IBM to use his operating system as the basis for their personal computer, even when he had no operating system yet developed. But he was so persuasive that they accepted his proposal, even though they had been presented with proposals from others. And then he went out and had to find an operating system and put it together. And as a result, today, he's the richest man in the world. It all goes back to that critical meeting with IBM when this young little kid with a weaselly little face, 26 years old, was able to convince them that he could provide them with what they wanted. Now, another form of communication is a written letter or proposal, but this merely indicates clarity of thought. If you can write well, it means that you can think well. If you think well, people have a higher regard for you. But especially the presentation. Now, the presentation is where you actually stand up and you speak to a small or large group. And wonderfully enough, most of the best business speakers today were once terrified of speaking on their feet. They say every master was once a student, was once an amateur. Every master was once a disaster, somebody says. So you can learn to be an excellent speaker. You can earn the respect and esteem of others. You can accelerate your career. You can improve your life in ways what you learn in this seminar. Now, making a speech, giving a talk, is a logical process like dialing a phone number. It's not really a hard thing to do unless you're looking at it from the outside. Sometimes people come up to me and they say, boy, I should get into speaking. It looks easy. And I learned from Og Mandino many years ago. He said, anything that's easy to do is hard to prepare. He said, anything that looks easy to do is hard to prepare. So a person who actually gives a great performance, whether it's speaking or singing or anything else, has done a lot of preparation. The basic structure of a talk is built around three parts. It's the opening, the body of the talk, and the close. And you must be very clear about those three parts. Now, the opening can be short or long. It should usually not be more than about 10% of the talk. The close can be short or long, but should not be more than about 5%. And the body is like an accordion. It can expand depending upon the amount of time that you have. So a talk, in a way, is like a sales presentation. It's based on the AIDA model, A-I-D-A, which says the first part of selling is to get attention, the A, arouse interest, the I, create desire, the D, and then ask for action. And the key to successful speaking is preparation. Preparation is 90% of a successful talk. People think that successful speaking is based on being an artist and having great jokes and sense of humor and wonderful personality and everything else. Well, I have heard speakers that were so effective they got a standing ovation from an audience full of speakers, even though they weren't good speakers at all. It was clear to everyone that they weren't good speakers, but they had prepared so thoroughly, and they gave their talk in such an orderly fashion and with such passion, such belief in their subject, that everybody was moved by the speaker. Some of the great speakers in history have been people like Mother Teresa. And Mother Teresa could not speak at all. She just spoke from her heart. She simply planned and organized what she had to say, and then she spoke from her heart, and she spoke clearly and without equivocation, and affected, influenced the lives of a billion people because she was well prepared. Now, there's a logical seven-step process for preparing your talk. And number one, you begin with your audience. It's very much like selling. Imagine you're going to give a talk. And what you want to do is you want to sell the audience on an idea. You want to sell them on yourself. You want to sell them on doing something. You want to sell them on changing a behavior. So you always start with your audience. In business, we call this your target market. Who are they? Who is the audience? You analyze them carefully. You find out their ages, their income, their education, their occupations, their needs, their concerns. You also want to know their familiarity with your subject. When I, as a professional speaker, work with a client, we'll send them a questionnaire, and they will fill out a whole series of answers on their business and on the upcoming meeting. And then when I talk to them, I'll ask them a whole bunch of questions about the people who will be in the audience. And what is their level of knowledge and experience? What is the message that they need to hear? What is it that the company wants them told in the message that they're hiring me to give, and so on? So I begin with tremendous clarity, and that's really, really important. One of the worst things you see is people who give talks to an audience that goes completely over their head. They don't even take the time to think about their talk. And I've heard speakers say it's much easier to get a new audience than a new talk. So they just give the same talk to whatever audience they get a chance to speak to. And almost within a couple of minutes, the audience knows this speaker has not prepared for me. This speaker does not know very much about me. Another question you have to ask, this is still on number one, is why are you talking to this group? Why? why is it you that is talking to this group? And then, why are they listening? So those are the three. Who are they? And why are you talking to them? And why are they listening? And I'll send you out this material in information form. And these are things to think through and answer before you stand up. So number two, in preparing a great talk, is start with the end in mind. What result do you desire from this talk? When I speak to my clients, I will say, tell me, if you could interview people at the end of my talk and ask them, what do they learn and what are they going to do differently as a result of Brian's talk, what would you want them to say? And then I discuss this with my clients and we walk through it until we are absolutely clear that this is the result that we want from this talk. We want them to do more of this or less of that or be open to this or make changes or feel a different way or act a different way. But we always are clear with the end result. That's very important. If you want to make a sales presentation, which a talk is in a way, you'd be very clear that at the end of the talk, you want the client to agree that your product or service is the ideal one for them. And you focus everything that you do to marshal your arguments to achieve that goal. Now remember, and this comes from Emerson, the ultimate aim of all speaking is action. What does this mean? It means that the person that you're speaking to in a group will take an action different from what they would have taken if you hadn't spoken to them. So you must be clear about the action that you want them to take after they listen to you. What one major point do you want to make? If you're going to make a lot of points and you could distill it down to a single point, what's the one point or idea that you want to get across? What one specific action do you want them to take as a result of having listened to you? And especially, what do you want them to think or feel afterwards? Often I'm asked to speak to people and give them ideas on personal motivation. So my one goal is for them to take specific action to achieve a specific goal or to develop a specific talent or skill or to achieve a specific sales target or to achieve a specific management goal. But it's very, very clear that that is the goal and everything else is like marshaling arguments toward achieving that. So the third part of preparation is for you to plan your opening. Plan the opening to introduce the subject and to connect to the closing. In other words, in your opening, what you want to do is you want to set the stage for the subject, and then you want to point to where you're going to be at the end. Let me give you an example of how I will often start a talk. I will stand up and I will say, I have some good news for you. More people are going to make more money in the years ahead than have been made in the last 200 years. Our economy has hockey sticked and has grown by $3 trillion in 5 years. And all of this money is running through somebody's hands, and your job is to make sure that some of it runs through yours and sticks. Now, at the end of the talk, I will come back and I will say, let me repeat. This is one of the best times in all of human history to be alive because more people are going to make more money in the years ahead than anyone else. And with these ideas that we've talked about, if you put them into action, you will be one of the ones who make more money. Everything else goes in between, and it's all the arguments that you can marshal. But it starts off with an opening that gets people's attention. And I'll come back to this in a second. So there's 7 ways to open a talk. You can present a problem that needs a solution. You can say, ladies and gentlemen, sales are off 30% overall in the market, and our job is to get them back to 100% of quota. And today I'm going to show you how to do it. Or you can present a common goal. You say, we want this team to be the very best team in the company by the end of this year. And what we'll talk about today will be the critical team-building techniques that are necessary to achieve it. So everybody has the common goal. You can ask a rhetorical question to grab attention. This is a powerful device. I'll sometimes start off a talk and I'll say, what is the highest paid work in your industry? And they'll all look at each other and wonder and say, you know, be president or something like that. I'll say, no, the highest paid work in your industry or any industry is thinking. Because the way you think, the quality of your thinking, largely determines the quality of your decisions, your actions, and your results. So thinking is the highest paid work, and the very best thinkers in this industry are the highest paid. Today, I'm going to give you some ideas on how you can think more effectively in the weeks and months ahead in your business. Here's another way, number 4, make a startling statement. One of the startling statements was, of 100 people starting work today, at the end of their working lifetimes, one will be rich, 5 will be financially independent, 15 will have some money, and 80% will be dead, broke, or dependent upon relatives. Which group are you going to be in? Startling statement gets people's attention. Let me show you how you can be in the top 5% by the time you finish working. Tell your own story. There's a wonderful part of every talk called My Own Story. And what I'll often do is I'll introduce the subject, as we just talked about, and then I'll say, you know, I didn't know any of this when I was starting off. In fact, I didn't graduate from high school. I came from a difficult family. When I started off, I was so far behind, I thought I was first. And then I'll tell a little bit about my background, a little bit about my story, and show how my story bridges into the subject. Now, here's an important point. When you stand up there, people will listen to you all the time you're up there. And many speakers, even professional speakers, make the mistake of thinking that because they're listening, they're interested. So what they do is they talk about themselves. And they talk about themselves for the whole talk. And they talk about their thoughts and their feelings and their hopes and their dreams and their problems and their passions and their hurts and their pains and their whole childhood and everything else. And people nod and smile and listen. And a couple of people kind of, you know, like it because some people are very emotional. But at the end of the day, they've learned nothing. They haven't contributed anything. So use your own story only as spice. Use your own story as an illustration, as a bridge, if you like, to keep people involved. Very important. Now, you could also start a talk by comparing or contrasting two things or conditions. For example, I will say, today we'll talk about the behaviors of winners and the behaviors of losers. And I'll show you how to use more of the behaviors of winners and less of the behaviors of losers to accomplish the thing you want. And then throughout the talk, I'll talk about top people do this, average people do that. Top people do this, average people do that. Top people think this way, act this way, and so on. Average people do that. And it keeps people's attention, and of course, everybody thinks of themselves as superior. So everybody is tuned in to the continual contrast. Very powerful way to start a talk and even to build a talk. And finally, number seven is to promise advantages or benefits from listening. In psychology, they have what is called positive expectancy. And we know that everything that people think and feel is based on expectations. So if you can build expectancy at the beginning, it's very powerful. If you start a talk, you can say, I have some really important things to share with you that you are really going to enjoy. And if you put these things into action, they're going to make an enormous difference in your work or your personal life. That's a wonderful way to build expectancy because everybody leans forward like a kid's first Christmas and says, I can hardly wait. I wonder what it is. And then, of course, you follow through with your delivery. But if you build expectancy at the beginning, it's like a flashbulb in the face of the audience. If you build expectancy, everybody's wired to hear. They can hardly wait to hear what you have to say. Now, there's five basic reasons for giving a talk, and you must be clear about your reason. I've given eulogies for people who have died. I have given seminars to set up the following speakers. I've given four-day seminars in order to bring about a total transition in thinking and feeling. You must be clear about the reasons why you're giving the talk, and those have to influence everything that you do. So number one reason for giving a talk is to persuade people. This is usually the main reason, is to persuade people to do something that they wouldn't have done in the absence of your talk. And you must be clear what it is. It's amazing how many people will give an absolutely wonderful talk, full of facts and details and statistics and stories, and at the end they'll sit down and everybody will applaud, and nobody will have the slightest idea what was the purpose of that talk, aside from entertaining people with verbal gymnastics. A second reason for giving a talk is to inform, to present new information. In the many seminars and conferences and association meetings that I attend, they'll always have top executives who'll get up and tell what has happened in the last quarter or the last year, what's going to happen, what the company's plans are. They'll tell everybody at once and they'll illustrate it so everybody gets the news at once. So informing is very important. A third reason for giving a talk is to entertain. And you must be clear about this. We're talking about Comedy Central or comedy clubs. Some talks are meant just to be entertaining. I remember once I was asked to give an after-dinner talk to a construction association, and these guys drank with both hands. About 150 people there, and they had an open bar for an hour, and then they had bottles of wine and liqueurs on the table for another hour and a half, 2 hours. And at 9 o'clock, I got up to speak, and I think there was not a sober person in the house. They were kind of blinking their eyes and trying to focus in on me. And I tried to give them a serious talk about leadership and business development, and it was a complete disaster. The only type of talk you give after a person has had a drink is a talk that's humorous, story, poetry, something that's fun, something that's light, that is not too serious. A fourth reason is to inspire and to bring hope, to bring motivation, to bring confidence to people. Inspiring talks are very, very popular. People love to be uplifted and given reasons to be encouraged and to set bigger goals and to face their challenges and to overcome obstacles and resistance. So that kind of a talk has a tremendous validity in its place. And finally, praise is another reason for giving a talk. each Christmas, I have a Christmas party with my staff. And after we've had dinner, I'll stand up and I'll give a little talk and I'll go right around the room and I'll address every single staff member. And we have maybe 25 people. And I'll say, Bill, Susan, Lauren, Tom, Larry, Gary, Victor, Shirley, whatever their names are. And I will talk to them in front of everybody about what wonderful things they did this year and how important they are to our company and how much we appreciate them. And I just go around and I'll do that for every single person in the room. And everybody sits perfectly silently while I talk to each person and then perfectly silently when I talk about them. And at the end of it, everybody's happy and everybody applauds and everybody feels good about themselves because they've been praised in front of another group. By the way, as a device, if you're ever speaking, you can pick out somebody from the audience and say, you know, I wanted to be sure to mention this. But, you know, Charlie Wilson is here today. And you know what Charlie did 2 weeks ago? It was the most amazing darn thing. I heard about it before I came up here. And give a little bit of a talk. I say, throw a flower to Charlie. And you'll be absolutely astonished because when you compliment a person in the audience, everybody in the audience feels complimented as well because they're a part of the audience. That's why you never criticize, never attack, never get upset or angry with a person in the audience, because even if a person in the audience is difficult or insulting, if you overreact to them, the whole audience will feel that you're attacking them. I had a case some years ago where I was speaking for IBM, and I was talking about some of the problems during leadership about teaching people to lead is really important. And we have a lot of problems in the education system today. And one guy, who turned out his wife was a teacher and a member of the teachers union, challenged me and attacked me about nothing's wrong with education. The education system could be fixed if you just poured more money in and so on. And I said, well, it's really not the case because there's no correlation between how much you spend on education and the quality of education. It has to do with the quality of teaching. Well, he attacked me again, and I was trying to explain. He attacked me again, and I got a little bit hot under the collar. I'll never forget it. Because at the end of the day, when I got my grades, the lowest grades I'd ever gotten from an IBM audience, everybody in the audience was mad at me because I was arguing with one of their members. So you have to be really, really careful. I never did that again in my whole life, I can tell you that. Okay, the body of your talk is where you present your evidence, make your case, win your argument. It's almost like you're going in front of the jury and you're speaking to the jury in the courtroom. You're going to get your client off or you're going to get the defendant convicted. So you always build your talk, especially if it's a short talk, you build it around 3 points. My basic rule, if it's 20 to 30 minutes, it's based on 3 key points. An opening, 3 key points, and a close. If it's 60 minutes, it's opening, 5 key points, and a close. If it's 90 minutes, it's opening, 7 key points, and a close. You can vary that. It's not a rule, depending upon the size of the points. But if you only have a 20 or 30 minute talk, then what you do is you build it around an opening, 3 key points, and a close. And make sure you know what they are. There's a formula that you can use called the PREP formula. And the PREP formula is P-R-E-P. It's a very powerful way to develop a talk. And if you prepare thoroughly and practice, you sound like a genius when you present your information using the PREP formula. And what it is this, is P stands for your point of view. So for example, I would say more people are going to earn more money in the coming years than ever before in American economic history. Point of view. And then the R stands for reasons for my point of view. The reasons for my point of view is that there were 5,000 millionaires in the year 1900, and there were 5 million by the year 2000. Well, that sounds like an incredible growth of 1,000 times, but in the year 2006, there were 8.9 million millionaires, most of them self-made, a jump of almost 50% in 5 years, two of which years were recession years. So we have reached the takeoff point, the hockey stick point, in our society. That's my reasons. Okay, then you give examples, like I just gave examples. For instance, I spoke to a person the other day who started a business 3 years ago and passed the $1 million mark in 36 months. And then finally, you come back to the last P, P-R-E-P, and you restate your point of view. So this is a great time to be alive financially because you can make more money today than has ever been possible if you learn how. So that formula, point of view, reasons for your point of view, an example to illustrate your point of view, and then the point of view restated, is very powerful. Sometimes if I only give a 7-minute talk, you can use that formula to give an opening and 1 key point using those 4 illustrators and then a close, and it's very powerful. Now, another thing that you need to do is transition from one point to another. Transitions are one of the most important parts of speaking. What does that mean? It means when you are changing subjects, like you're going to from point 1 to point 2, you have to make it clear that you have finished on that point and you're going to the next point. How do you do that? You say, now I would like to go to the next point. Or, now having covered that point, I'd like to go on to something different. Or, now, moving along to the next point. But make it clear with a pause and then a shift of gears that you're now going to the next point so people understand that you're not still talking about the previous point. And then the fourth key part in the body is to use stories, examples, and anecdotes and humor to illustrate each key point. What I do is I draw a line down the center of a piece of paper and I make my points down the left-hand column, and then next to each point I'll think of a story, an illustration, an example, something from the newspaper, something from my own experience. And I'll use what I'll call later the windshield wiper model, is I will give the point and tell a little story, give the point, tell a little fact, give the point, use a quote, give the point, take an example, and so on. It is absolutely fascinating when people hear a person tell the point and then give a story that illustrates it. Here's an interesting point. The right brain, which makes all the decisions for the human being, is activated by stories and pictures. When you tell stories in your talk, people will forget all the facts, but they'll remember the stories for years. When you tell stories that illustrate the points really well, people will think it was a brilliant talk. If you only give facts, it'll be like a dry academic, mathematician, scientist giving an academic paper at a college. But if you give fact and story, you sound like a brilliant speaker. So always think of what kind of a story could I use to illustrate this? What kind of a piece of humor could I use to illustrate this? I'll give you an example. Sometimes I'll be giving a talk, and I'll make a point, and I'll say, you know, that reminds me, I was just talking to someone the other day in company ABC, and they had the same question, and this is what they did. And whenever you tell a story, it's like kids around a campfire leaning forward when you say, once upon a time. When I finish a break, I will often call the whole audience back, 800, 1,000 people. I'll call them back, and I'll say, ladies and gentlemen, once upon a time, there was a man right here in Cleveland, and I'll start to tell the story. And as I start to tell the story, people rush to their seats, and other people going, shh, 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 quiet, quiet. And I'll start the story off very slowly, but by the time I launch into the second or third paragraph, everybody's back in their seats, everybody's leaning forward like kids around a campfire to hear the rest of the story. And the story will bridge into the talk that we're going to do immediately thereafter. So now the third part, we say the three parts are opening, developing the body, and closing. Close strongly with a punch, and the closing must be practiced and prepared. Think of a musical in Broadway or a play. You'll notice that every single line is scripted, but especially the very end is scripted. And a good movie is a movie that has a powerful ending, a really uplifting ending. A good stage play is a play that has a tremendous ending, that at the end everybody's so happy they burst out of their seats and give a standing ovation. So you have to really think through the ending. Many times in movie making, by the way, they will create an ending and they will test it in front of audiences. If the audiences don't really like it, they'll go back and reshoot it. Sometimes the actors are called back from halfway around the world to reshoot an ending, and they'll try it again, and they'll keep reshooting the ending until they have one that works. You'll also find, by the way, that movies can be very good in the body, but disappointing in the ending. And you see this all the time. Had a poor ending, bad ending, unbelievable ending, not a very happy ending. I mean, the endings just turn the critics off completely and can actually kill a movie. So therefore, think about your ending. And the wonderful thing about an ending is you start with the ending. And we'll come to that when we talk about preparing presentations. So how do you end? Well, the simplest way is to close with a challenge to action. You say, now, based on what I've said today, when we go out of here tomorrow, our goal is to do this, and the very first thing we do at 9 o'clock Monday morning is this. And I was right, are we going to do that? Yes. And everybody applauds and cheers, and they all commit to action. The second is you can make an inspiring statement. You can stand up. You could say there's, for example, there's nothing that we cannot do if we work together. And stop. And everybody will applaud. And so you say that with inspiration. Or you can do a summary. A very powerful way to end a talk, by the way, is just to summarize it. Now, today we've talked about three key points, so let me just talk about them one more time. This is a great time to be alive. If you learn the critical skills you need, you can take advantage of it, and you can become financially independent in the course of your working lifetime. So your job is to take these ideas and apply them as soon as you can when you leave here. So a summary is a very powerful way to wrap up. And then the fourth way that you can close is with a relevant story, a quote, or a poem that makes your key point. if you could tell a story, this reminds me of a story, and you tell a little story, and everybody can relate to the story because it relates to your subject. You can use a quote that relates to your subject. You can tell a little poem that relates to your subject. And the powerful way to end, because people love to have the talk tied up with a ribbon at the end. They know this is the end of the talk. They like to know that you've come to the end and you've said something solid. Well, preparation is the key to effective speaking. And the way that you prepare a talk, especially at the beginning, is you write out a complete outline of your talk. You take a piece of paper and you write down every single thing that you think should go in the talk, and then you organize the talk into categories: the opening, the three key points, the closing, and you may have to do this several times. With major talks that I've given, I've often spent 50 and 100 hours preparing a talk that was 20 or 30 minutes long because the talk was so important, and I went over it and over it and over it and did it over and over again. Now, once you have written out your talk and you like the flow of it, dictate your talk into a dictaphone or into an audio player so that you can hear it back. It's amazing what you will hear when you play it back. You'll actually say things that you don't even understand. So there's nothing that replaces preparation. Remember what I said, 90% of effective speaking is good preparation. Another way to prepare for a talk, especially if it's important, is to videotape your talk before a friendly audience. Have your family sit down, have your coworkers in the office sit down, set up a video camera, shoot it, and then go and look at it yourself. See how it sounds. Look at how you look. Look at the way you stand. Look at the way you use your hands and your body, and look for ways to improve. Most people hate to listen to themselves or see themselves, but remember, your most important goal is not your ego, but to give a great talk that everybody likes. So don't be afraid to look foolish the first time. Remember, when you tried to ride a bicycle, you fell off. When you tried to type with a keyboard, you made mistakes. When you drove the first time, you made mistakes as well. And it's only repetitive practice that smooths out the bumps in a talk. Tell your spouse and your friends parts of the talk. That's a wonderful thing. If you're going to give a talk over the dinner table, explain to your spouse the talk exactly the way you're going to tell it. And tell your friends in the audience, and tell your friends in the office, and tell your friends at lunch. And just repeat little parts of the talk so that you've repeated them and seen their reaction and their response. You do this several times with each of the little parts of your talk. When you finally get up to give it, it's all smoothed out and it sounds great. And finally, review and rehearse the talk in your mind. Think about it in your mind. Drive along and repeat the talk. Visualize yourself giving the talk. Plan it over and over. Go for a walk and give the talk to yourself. Go and sit outside and give the talk to the park, if you like, or to the trees. But the more you get to rehearse and plan the talk and prepare it in your mind, the better it will be when you actually give it. Now, there's three final rules for an effective presentation. Then I want to go on to some of the skills of presentation. Rule number one is tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them. That's the simplest of all formats, and it's in every speaking book. Tell them what you're going to tell them. I'm going to tell you how you can earn more money in the years ahead than ever before. Then tell them how to do it, and then say, I've just told you how to make more money in the years ahead than ever before. Now go out and do it. Very simple way to speak. A second rule is have a good opening and a good closing, and put them as close together as possible. Now, this is an important point. When I give talks, I'm often booked to give a talk for 30 minutes. And so I'll plan the talk so it will last 30 minutes because they will want me to be punctual. And then the previous speaker will go on for 10 extra minutes and they'll say, can you shrink it to 20 minutes? Well, I've got my whole talk planned, but the two things that are locked in like bookends are the opening and the closing. So I will give the opening and then I'll just cut pieces out of the center of the talk and give the closing because both the opening and the closing are pre-prepared. Now, here's a rule I learned from my speaking coach, Ron Arden, is that they never know what you leave out. They never know what you leave out. So never feel that you have to give the whole talk, because if there are time constraints and you have to slow down, you have to illustrate the talk more, they never know what you leave out. So don't feel impelled to give it all. And finally, the old rule, be prepared, be brief, be seated. There's a famous story of Golda Meir, who was chairing a major international conference. And it was supposed to be over at 9, but because the speakers were politicians, it droned on to 11:30 at night, by which time everybody was tired. And she got up and she said, I have a 30-minute talk prepared, which I spent a lot of time on, but like a good mother, she said, I'm going to suggest that all my kids go to bed. And so thank you for being here. And she got a standing ovation, the only standing ovation of the night, because she made her talk basically 1 minute long, but it fitted exactly what the audience needed. Okay, the key to excellent presentations is practice, practice, practice. Now let's talk about delivering the presentation. We've talked about some of these things already, and so I'll touch upon them again. But you've heard people say, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And there's a famous story of a gentleman, a man who gets sentenced to prison. He goes to prison, and in the prison dining room, they're all sitting there, and a guy stands up, and everybody quiets down, and he says, 34! And everybody laughs to beat the band. And a little while later, somebody stands up and tinks his tin cup, and they all quiet down, and he says, 93! Everybody laughs. And this new prisoner says, what's everybody laughing at? He said, well, there's only one joke book in the whole prison library, and everybody's read that joke book through so many times that everybody knows all the jokes, so you don't need to tell the joke, you just tell the number of the joke. Well, he wanted to be accepted by the prison population, so he went to the library, checked out the book, studied it all, memorized all the jokes, and after a few weeks, he was ready, and he stood up, and he tinked his glass, and everybody quieted down and listened, and he said, 47. And there was no laughter. And so he sat down, kind of shattered, and he said to the guy next to him, he said, that's a really funny joke. He said, why didn't they laugh? He said, well, you have to understand, it's not the joke, it's the way you told it. So it's the way you tell the joke, it's the way you say the words that more than anything else has the impact on other people. Your ability to communicate your thoughts and feelings effectively so that they move others to action is a vital skill that you can learn through practice. Remember, every person who is a good speaker today, well, that's a poor speaker. You can take average information and you can turn it into an exciting and persuasive presentation. So here's some of the things you need to learn. Your ability to speak on your feet, to influence others and persuade them to take action, can move you ahead more rapidly than any other skill. In fact, I've studied politics for many years, and what I found is that a successful politician has two great skills. One is the ability to interact effectively one-on-one, to communicate one-on-one. The other is the ability to move an audience. Now, you don't have to be a fantastic speaker. There's a lot of politicians that are not great speakers, but they're good enough. And they prepare thoroughly, and the information they give is really solid, and that's enough. You don't have to be a genius. You don't have to be like a person who's given several thousand presentations to be very effective if you're well prepared. Well, every speech or presentation, remember I told you, has three parts: the opening, the body, and the close. So your opening sets the stage for your talk, and it prepares your audience for what's coming. Many people don't understand this. I've seen people stroll onto the stage without any realization that from the minute they come into view, people are assessing them. Within the first 4 seconds, people have already decided what they're going to think about the talk. Within 30 seconds, they've pretty much finalized it. So when you begin a talk, just like you begin a movie or a stage play, you must remember the first few seconds are very important. It's not that you can't overcome them. I've seen people start slow and end strong. I've seen people start off hesitatingly and get finally into the rhythm of it and get standing ovations. But you can't count on this. So first thing that you do when you give a talk of any kind, a sales talk, presentation, at a meeting, but especially in front of an audience, is you build expectancy. Remember we said before, building expectancy is critically important. If you're going to give a talk to an audience, the starting point of building expectancy is your introduction. So the rule is that you write out your introduction word for word. Don't make it too long, but write it out word for word, print it in large typeface, 14 or 16 point font, and then ask the introducer to read it word for word. Because many people's talks have been ruined by a bad introducer who either made up their introduction or had no introduction at all to make up. So they get up and they say, we've got Charlie speaking today, and I don't know why he's here. Must have been a last-minute fill-in, ho-ho. And you get up to speak, and the whole audience is deflated. They feel insulted. Whereas if you give a preparatory introduction, and the introduction always begins saying, our speaker today is well-qualified to speak on this subject. He or she has done this, has accomplished this, and so on and so forth. And the very last part, they say, so welcome Brian Tracy, who will be speaking on achieving peak performance in the 21st century. Your name and the title is the last thing mentioned in the introduction. The first parts are why you are eminently qualified to speak on the subject, which gets everybody leaning forward and paying attention. Imagine if a person says, we've got William Smith has come in today to speak to us about marketing in the 21st century. So he's got a lot of experience, so let's listen to him. Here you are, William. As opposed to an introduction, is today we have one of the foremost authorities on marketing in the country today. His ideas have transformed and revolutionized every organization he's ever spoken to. Many people have walked out of his talks and doubled and tripled their sales and profitability. And today, he's going to give us some of the best ideas he has ever learned in working with more than 1,000 corporations. Now look at the difference between those two introductions. Everybody is leaning forward. They can hardly wait if the introduction is strong. So before you open your mouth, the whole audience is on your side. Now, when you come out and you build your introduction, as I said before, one of the things I always do is I say, thank you. This is going to be a great talk. I have put together some ideas for you that may transform your entire career. In other words, the question is, I wonder what they are. And then you start into your talk. Very good way to build expectancy. The next thing you do is build a bridge. And this is really, really important. Just like when you meet a person socially, you say, you know, what do you do? Where are you from? Do you have children? How long have you been in town? You're looking for something that the two of you have in common. So I'll always do lots of research. For example, I was speaking to PepsiCo recently, 150 international managers. And I got up, and the first thing I said is, I want to thank you, and my family wants to thank you, because we are big customers of yours. We consume Frito-Lay and Pepsi and Gatorade, and we have this all over our house. So thank you very much for the wonderful work you do to prepare those great products that we use every single day in our home. It's a perfect introduction, perfect bridge, and they were all wide open and listening for the rest of the talk. So you could always find a bridge. I used to be in your industry. My brother has worked in your industry for years. I've always been a great admirer of your industry ever since this happened to me and one of your people did this to me. Any kind of bridge is better than no bridge at all, because other than that, you're actually shouting across the street. You're shouting across a canyon rather than speaking with them, you're speaking at them. Now, build interest and excitement. Open with energy and enthusiasm about your subject. Now, the one fatal mistake that a speaker can make is to have no energy. There is nothing that is more disappointing for an audience than a speaker who doesn't seem to have the energy. Person gets up, says, I'm really tired today because I didn't get much sleep and I've had a cold, and so please excuse me. And it looks like they were just beaten up in the hallway before they were sent in. That is the biggest sin that you can make. On the other hand, come in and you hear my voice on this recording. Come in and you're happy and you're positive and you're upbeat. And imagine that you have tried for years. This is an audition. If you do this well, you're going to get a great job, a great opportunity, and you are so happy to be with these people. Damn, these people have come here to see you, to hear you, and you're so happy to be with them. That's what you convey in your opening. Now, this doesn't mean that you have to jump up and down. I've seen some superb speakers who have what is called constrained enthusiasm. They'll get up and they'll lean forward and they'll say, I am so happy to be with you today. I promise you the next few minutes are going to be some of the most worthwhile minutes you have ever spent. Let me tell you why I think this way. And they just talk with this kind of intensity and everybody leans into the energy and plugs into it. And you can do the same. Now, choose your opening words with care. This is one of the great rules. If you'll notice, in a play, a Shakespearean play, or any kind of a play, the opening words from the first person who appears have been planned and rehearsed over and over again because they sort of like throw a lightning jolt at the audience. So choose your opening words with care and then memorize them. Memorize the words. So when you start the talk, those words are the ones that you use. If you've given the talk more than once, you always open with those words. If you remember Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, where it starts off, bum 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 bum, bum 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 bum. Everybody in the world knows those first few beats. They were so powerful. So when you start off, always start off with a very strong statement. Always start off with a question. Always start off with something that you have planned and prepared that you know is going to reach out and grab the lapels of the audience and pull them towards you. But here's the best news, by the way, and I've shared this with speakers over the years, and I ask you this as a question. Have you ever gone to a movie and hoped that it would be a bad movie? And the answer is, of course not. You go to a movie, you're hoping the movie will be a good movie. I mean, you've gone to a lot of trouble to go to the movie. When you go to a talk, you want the talk to be good. You want the speaker to succeed. When somebody comes to hear you speak, when you stand up to speak, everybody wants you to win. Everybody wants your talk to be good. Everybody is on your side. They're all your friends. And that's a really important thing to remember, is when you stand up and smile at them, they are all on your side, and they want your talk to be successful, and they will forgive you a lot. Just like you'd forgive a poor opening to a movie or a couple of dumb parts that don't make sense, because you want the movie, all in all, to be a good movie. So, build rapport and likability. Here's the rule. The more that people like you when you give a talk, the more mistakes you can make and the less they will care. So the very best way to build rapport and likability is to smile and be happy to be there. Just smile. Stand up in front of the audience and look at them and smile like, there you are. Wow. Like, geez, I'm actually having a chance to speak to you. I remember once I was asked to speak for a commission, a Washington commission made up of 16 of the most powerful people in the United States. Unbelievable. And when they asked me to be in charge of this commission, to facilitate it, to lead it, speak in front of it, I had them send me all the background information. The background information was about 3 inches, because the commission had been functioning for some months, and tremendous amount of testimony, documentation, and so on. I remember I spent an entire weekend, 16 hours, reviewing that material, and the biography of every single person on that commission, and the background and every single argument. And then when I stood up to speak, I immediately introduced myself and bridged into the subject and made it absolutely crystal clear that I knew everything that they had done up to now and everything they were trying to do in the future. And none of them were aware that I was going to be there. And within 5 minutes, the chairman of the commission said, "You take over. You can take over from now on." He sat down and just listened. I'd never done that before. And it was very, very successful. But I prepared 16 hours for my opening. And in the retrospect, I say, thank heavens I didn't prepare 15 or 14, that I did the preparation. Because afterwards, by the way, afterwards, when you've done really good preparation and you've done everything properly, you'll be so happy all the work that you put into it will disappear, and all that will be left was the joy and satisfaction of having done a great job. Now, you connect immediately with the need, problem, or goal of the audience. Remember, people's favorite radio station is WII-FM. What's in it for me? So you immediately connect and you say, what is it that these people want? What is it that is of greatest concern to them? And you immediately stand up and promise to give it to them. So I speak to a sales audience. I say, how many people here would like to double your income? And everybody says, I would. They all raise their hand almost instinctively. I said, well, if I show you how, will you give it a try? Just, that's all I ask, is just give it a try. If I show you ways that have helped thousands of other people double their income, would you try them out? And they all say yes. I said, good, let's begin. I have their total interest. I've built a bridge. I've connected with one of their needs and wants, and from then on, they're listening for the way to double their income. And, of course, my job is to deliver. Start strong. Remember, the audience is full of anticipation, almost like a bow and an arrow drawn back. They're ready to go. So stand straight, walk to the podium, stop, smile, and wait. Now, the most powerful way to open a talk is with silence. Most speakers are uneasy and they're tense, and they rush up and they start talking right away. But professionals will walk up to the podium, stop, and then they look at the audience and smile, like they're waiting for one more person to arrive, or they're waiting for someone in the back to stop, and they just smile and sweep the audience very slowly, looking at the audience like this is an incredibly fascinating group of people, and allow the silence to sit there. I saw a speaker do this for 2 minutes once until the whole audience was so tense and so ready for him to speak, and then he just rolled out his opening sentence. And the audience tension just snapped like a splash, like a slap on the top of a bucket of water. It was unbelievable. He was so artistic at that silence. So it's a very powerful way to open a talk. Once you've opened the talk, launch straight into it. Don't start talking about, I couldn't find a parking space and I'm not sure if I'm prepared and nice to see you and everything. Just go straight into the talk and go straight into the heart of the talk. And then you can back out later and talk a little bit about your background and things like that. But go straight into what is of greatest interest to them. For example, I will start a leadership talk. And I will say that more than any other time in human history, our society and our businesses need leaders like you. And you gentlemen and ladies are uniquely qualified to lead this company into the 21st century. And I'm going to give you some of the best tools used by some of the best managers in the best business in the last 100 years. And if you use them, you'll get results out of all proportion to the efforts. And I have their total attention. And then I can talk about where this information came from and how you can use it and give illustrations. But now they're listening. Start with a strong, thought-provoking statement, as I just told you. Open with a story that illustrates your main point. Sometimes I'll open, as I said before, I'll say, once upon a time, there was a man in this industry who wondered if his business was going to survive. But then he learned this, and then he did that, and this is what happened. People are fascinated by stories, and then you can bridge straight from the story into your subject. Tell your own story and how it relates to your talk. I sometimes talk about how, when I could no longer get a laboring job, I got into sales. And I spun my wheels for 6 months until I finally began asking, why is it that some salespeople are more successful than others? And instead of wondering, I went and asked the top salesman in my company, why are you doing so much better than I am? And he told me, and I did what he did instead of what I was doing, and my sales went up. And from then on, I asked every salesperson for their best ideas, and I read books and listened to audio programs and went to seminars, and my sales hockey sticked, and within a year, I was making 10 times as much as a year before. And many of the people I started with were still there because they hadn't bothered to ask. And so I tell that kind of a story, and I'm going to tell you what I learned over the years that has helped me to be successful in sales. And they just leaned forward, and I walked them through what I learned. And they listened to me all day long, as many of you recall. Finally, remember this. Be warm and genial. Be likable. Be charming. Be happy to be there. Be friendly. Sort of imagine that your eyes are sun and you want to give your audience a tan and smile and look at your audience with warmth and kindness and geniality, because the better you feel, the happier you are, the more you smile, and the happier that they feel that you feel, the better is your whole talk. Nothing worse than a speaker who's tense and irritable and short-tempered and going too fast and so on, as opposed to a speaker who's warm and genial and friendly and gives good examples and smiles at people in the audience. Okay, here are 10 techniques used by the very best speakers that you can use with continual practice. Number one method, which I mentioned earlier, is called the windshield wiper method. Left brain, right brain, left brain, right brain. Remember, the left brain deals with facts and the right brain deals with stories, music, emotion, pictures. So you give a fact, tell a story. Give a fact, give an illustration. Give a fact, paint a picture. Give a fact, tell something humorous. So it's always fact, story, fact, story, fact, story. And what it does is it keeps people's minds fully engaged in your talk. I've given 4-day seminars and then handed out evaluation forms. And at the end of the day, at the end of 4 days, they say the time went too fast. I don't know where the 4 days went. And the reason was because they were fully engaged the whole time, which means they found it easy to listen. They found it enjoyable to learn. There was no stress. They were happy because of left brain, right brain, left brain, right brain. So here's the second technique. This technique number one. Technique number two is ask a question to grab attention and then pause and smile and wait for an answer. For example, I'll say, what is the one quality based on research that more predicts success in sales, family relationships, parenting, happiness, long life, and good health? What's the one quality more than anything else? And then I'll just wait. And I'll smile. And I'll wait. And I'll smile. And finally, someone will say, attitude? And it doesn't matter the answer. I will always say, you're right. Optimism is the most important quality you can develop. And I'll just answer the question myself. And the person will feel really good about themselves. And the whole audience will feel really good because someone in the audience was complimented for getting it right. So whatever they say, always compliment them. Say, you're right, and we call it optimism. And always make the person right. Never, ever, ever allow an audience member to be wrong. Always compliment them. Even if they have the wackiest answer, say, that is a good answer, and I'll tell you what it means, and you go on with your own answer. Number three way to speak is, remember that good speaking is enthusiastic conversation, back and forth. Now, if you're in a good conversation, what you do is you say something, and then the other person responds, and you say something, and the other person responds. Well, how could you do this if you're giving a speech? It's very simple. You create silences. You create silences. So you say something that's really interesting, and then you smile, and you allow a silence. And it doesn't have to be more than 3 or 4 or 5 seconds, but that's all it takes for people to absorb the remark and be ready for your next remark. Human beings cannot take more than 3 points in a row without going into mental overload. So good speakers are always presenting a point and pausing and then telling a little story, which allows people to absorb it, and then coming back and dealing with it again and so on. And so can you. Now, number four, remember, a speech must be given as if you were giving it to a single person. So even though you're talking to a large audience, remember, enthusiastic conversation, so you always use the word you, and you always imagine that you're speaking to a single person. I've heard people speak in what I call the Bible thumper mode. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what you gotta do. Well, wait a second. Would you say that to a person sitting across you at the dinner table? Well, of course not. If you wouldn't speak to a person one-on-one that way, don't speak to an audience. With the audience, all you do is you turn up the volume and you turn up the energy, but it's still one-on-one conversation. Number five is pause regularly. Perhaps the most powerful device in speaking to hold attention and increase interest is pausing. There's several different types of pauses, but let me tell you just two. One is called the dramatic pause. You say there are three things that can change your life. Pause. And everybody leans into the pause. Number one, pause and give it. Number two, and give it. Number three, pause. And this is the most important of all. Pause. Do this every single time. Pause. Those kind of pauses have an enormous impact on people, as opposed to one, two, three, babble, babble, babble. Now, the second pause is called a sense pause. A sense pause is you just take a couple of seconds. You say there are three things that can be helpful to you. And the first is knowing exactly what you want. Pause. The second is writing it down. Pause. The third is working on it every single day. Pause. So it allows people to absorb the information by pausing. So silences and pausing are where the most effective speakers go all the time. Now, number six is to vary the tempo and speed. My friend Ron Arden says, as opposed to driving sedately in an old car for groceries, imagine you're driving at Le Mans, constantly shifting gears. So you're constantly going faster and slower. If it's a really important point, slow down. If it's not an important point, you can speed up a little bit and then slow down again. So faster, slower causes people to stay interested. Point number seven in giving great talks is vary the volume and the tone. Make it louder and softer. Say, I want to share something really important with you, but this is the most important thing of all. You notice the difference. You could vary the tone and pick it up and hammer the point and then go back down again and say, there are other points that are important as well, but that's the most important of all. For example, let me give you one other point. And once you get this point, it's absolutely essential that you do something with it before you forget. So when you keep varying the speed and the tone, it makes the talk extremely interesting and makes you a very interesting person. And there are speakers who can say nothing of any interest or value, but they make it so fascinating that people say, geez, that was a great speech. What did he say? I have no idea. Now, number eight is stop, stand, and deliver on major points. So focus on a single person. You make a major point and you look at one person and you just wait, pause. And then you make another point and you look at another person and pause. Like they're the only person in the room and you're making it clear what the point is and you're aiming it straight at them. It's like a rifle shot. Number nine, move continually. Use your body, arms, and hands and eyes. So move your hands naturally, move your body, move a little bit. That doesn't mean you run back and forth across the stage. I never move out of a 3-foot square. I stand in a 3-foot square and people say I was moving all day long because what I do is I just move slowly. Is I'll move my hands, I'll step forward a little bit, I'll step back a little bit, I'll step forward, I'll turn my body to one side or to the other, and it looks like you're in continual motion without running around, which is very distracting for people. And finally, number 10, compliment the audience continually by telling them that they are special in some way. Always tell them how special they are. You know, I always start with my audience and I say, you know, you are an elite. You're in the top 10% of adults in the world today because you're here. Because only the top 10% of people will ever come to a learning experience like this in their whole lives. All the rest have an excuse not to go. They're back in the office complaining about the way business is, but you are here, which means you're in the top 10%. And then I go on and explain why and so on. So always compliment your audience. You're the best. You're the elite. You are the leaders of the industry. You're the most important people in our community. You're the ones that make things happen and so on. People love to hear that. And of course, it's true, because if they've come to hear you speak, they are a special group. Well, there are 10 things you can do to make your talk more effective as we come to the end here. Number one is practice, prepare, and rehearse in advance over and over again. The more you practice, prepare, and rehearse, the better your talk will be, and the more you'll make up for any lack of skill or experience. A person who prepares thoroughly will be 90% of the way there. When they stand up to speak, the audience knows this person has prepared for us. That is a compliment to the members of the audience, and from that moment on, they're on your side. They don't care what you do because you did prepare for them. Number two, warm up in your room by reciting poetry or drama. Remember, just like you would warm up your muscles prior to a physical or athletic contest, warm up your mouth by speaking very, very fast, counting numbers to 100, reciting your favorite poem or your favorite hymn. But get your mouth warmed up so that it's ready to go when you go out there to speak. Number three, take several deep breaths before you stand up. When you breathe deeply, you actually lower your mind into beta, and in beta, you're much more creative, you're more relaxed, you're more in control, you feel happy about yourself. So just breathe deeply before you begin speaking. As we said before, pause before you begin. Number four, relax, smile, and look directly at someone in the audience. Instead of sweeping like a minesweeper, look at one single person and smile at that person like you're so happy to see them. Number five, which goes with number four, is pick a friendly face. Someone is there smiling, leaning forward, nodding, and keep returning to that friendly face. Every time you connect with that friendly face in your audience who really likes you and likes what you're saying, you'll feel happy and more confident. So keep coming back to that person and focusing in on them when you make a major point. Number six, make eye contact with different people. Hold it for 5 to 7 words. So go right around like picking shots. Look at a person for 5 to 7 words, shift to the next person, say another sentence, shift to the next person, say another sentence, and everybody in the audience feels that you're looking at them. Number seven, move toward the audience, especially with important points. Move toward the audience and lean into the audience when you tell the point with enthusiasm, and they'll realize this is really important. And then you kind of step back when you're developing another point, and then step forward again when it's an important point. Stand straight. Number eight, stand straight. Let your hands fall to your sides. Remember, the normal way that people stand is their hands fall to their sides. What many people do is they hold their hands in front of them, which is called the fig leaf, which is a protective stance, or they put their hands in their pocket, or they fiddle with their belts, or put their hands behind them. Just let your hands hang naturally and bring them up like an orchestra conductor is bringing up the orchestra. Bring them up to make a point. Let them fall again naturally. Number nine, enjoy the experience. Have fun with the audience. Laugh when you say something funny. Laugh when they say something funny. Really important. And finally, number 10, take your subject seriously, but not yourself. The key to successful speaking is to prepare over and over again, and then practice, practice, practice. And if you do that, you'll soon become one of the best speakers. You'll get standing ovations, and people will say it to themselves, boy, that person really speaks well. There are no limits except the limits you place on yourself. Thank you very much for listening. Now, I'd like to give you a free gift as a way of saying thank you for being a loyal supporter of mine and a determined continuous learner. So find out what I've been working on lately and receive your special at www.briantracy.com/learner. That's www.briantracy.com/learner. Just go there right now and see what I've got for you. Thanks again for listening. I look forward to talking to you and maybe even seeing you soon.